My name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 26. I'm recording it on Wednesday, October 15th, 2008. The PE10 level today is around 16.17. It's a little above fair value, but stocks are still priced at reasonable levels as I speak. Prices have been changing dramatically in recent days, so by the time you hear this, that may no longer be so. The title of this podcast is The Last Bear Market. What's the big news in recent weeks is that we've had a price crash, stock price crash, and people are quite naturally alarmed. And we've had a lot of big names come out. Oh, just about everybody. John Bogle, the Burton Malkiel, I don't know exactly how to pronounce his name. I hope that's roughly right. The author of A Random Walk Down Wall Street. He's the one I'm thinking of. He just had a I don't know where the piece was published, but I read it on the internet today, and he's the latest one to come out and give this little sermon that middle-class investors should not panic, that they should leave their money in stocks, that it's a mistake to take your money out when prices are down, all this sort of thing. And, you know, all of this is consistent with the passive investing approach to investing, the passive investing model for understanding how stock investing works. And I've mentioned before, my background is not as a financial planner. My background is a journalist. I used to write for tax newsletters. I used to cover Capitol Hill and cover tax legislation and write about all the provisions in there that would affect the different companies that subscribe to our newsletters and write about the politics and all that sort of thing. As a journalist, these articles I've seen telling people not to panic, I'll tell you what they remind me of. Newspapers, it's a standard practice. You know, there are certain big name people out in the world, and when they die, you have to have an obituary the next morning. And of course, there's no way of knowing when people are going to die, but you know you're going to need this big article if you know, Tom Brokaw recently died, or Tom Brokaw is still with us. The one I'm thinking of is, I'm so sorry, I've forgotten his name, but the guy who had the Sunday morning talk show, and he was a good guy. He was a good interviewer, and it was a shock when he died. His name will come to me probably before the end of the podcast, but you know, these big names, whoever they happen to be. If a former president dies, or Solzhenitsyn, you know, recently died, they write the obituary in advance, often years in advance. You know, it could be 10 years, 20 years in advance, with the thought that when this person dies, you might have to change a couple facts there at the top, you know, what happened and so forth, but what his age was when he died. But you've got the thing ready to go. It's in your files, and when the event happens, you just pull it out. And I sort of wondered, reading these little sermons about, you know, how we should not panic because we've lost a huge percentage of our life savings. All of the comments made in these articles, they could have been written 10, 20, 30 years ago. Burton Malkiel he's been making this speech ever since his book came out. And my belief is there was a lot of merit in it when the book came out. It was state-of-the-art information in 1974. But it's not state-of-the-art information today. The passive investing model has been discredited by the academic literature dating back to the mid-1980s. So we're talking, you know, over 20 years. And they're still giving this same, you know, pep talk, whatever you want to call it. Now, you know, nothing that he said was flat out inaccurate. Everything he said was more or less right and more or less sensible. It's true, of course, that it's not a good idea to panic. It's true that if you hold stocks long enough, they will eventually come back. It's true that stocks in general offer a very strong value proposition for the middle-class investor. It's true that if anything, you should be buying more stocks when prices are lower, not selling. You should be selling when prices are high, not when they're low. So all of these statements are true, but isn't this presentation getting a little trite? Does it help anybody to hear these buzz phrases? You know, it doesn't work. People are not panicked because they're little children and they're you know, they don't understand these things that they're being told. They don't need this pep talk repeated. People are panicking for perfectly good reasons. People, you know, we have a hard time saving. We know we need to save more. And people are worried about their retirements. And now they've seen, I don't know what the percentage loss has been. It's you know, say from 2000 forward, what's the percentage loss? I haven't seen that written up, but it's, you know, I think it's 30% just in the last year or something like that. If you go back to 2000, it's even more. Stocks were doing poorly for 10 years before we had this price crash. So people have taken a big, big hit. And I think the so-called experts should take it more seriously than to just trot out these same empty phrases that we've all heard thousands and thousands of times. How does any of that help us know what to do with our money? You know, of course we shouldn't panic, but we wouldn't be having the panic if only the experts had told us in advance that this was going to happen. If they had told us when the PE10 level first went above 20, there's all these experts that are now coming out and saying, don't panic. They should have been coming out then saying, lower your stock allocation, for heaven's sakes, people. We're now in the red alert danger zone. There's never been a time when prices have been at this level and things haven't ended badly. Lower your stock allocation. And that speech should have been given in 1995, 13 years ago. If that speech had been given and had been given consistently by all the experts, we wouldn't be where we are today. Stocks would be doing just fine today. And I think it's quite possible the economy would be doing fine. If stocks hadn't gone to those insane levels that they went to in the 1990s, we wouldn't have had all this deception is a good word for it, built in to our economic system. Our stocks went to 3x fair value in the late 1990s. So everyone who had $100,000, who believed they had $100,000 accumulated, really had a third of that. They really had roughly $350,000. Everyone that had $100,000 had roughly $35,000. And everyone that thought they had accumulated $1 million had really accumulated $350,000. So we all were walking around playing this game of let's pretend. You know, I'll pretend I have more money than I have. I'll pretend that you have more money than you have if you'll pretend that I have more money than I have. Just let's not tell anybody. Let's just keep it all, you know, hushed up. Let's keep it all undercover. And we'll all play this game, and it'll make us feel good temporarily. And then it'll make us feel real, real, real bad when the market inevitably returns to normal price levels and we have to acknowledge that it was just a silly game. To pretend this way. Is this how grown-ups act with their money? This isn't a game of baseball, you know, or a computer game where you could just sort of goof off a bit. This is our life savings we're talking about. It seems to me there should be a certain level of seriousness in public discussions. And I don't get that in these comments that I'm hearing from these so-called experts. So that troubles me, because if we're not going to be serious now, when are we going to be serious? And so I don't know. Somehow thinking about that caused me to think about, I always just think about my own take. How do I present the realities to the people who listen to my stuff or read my stuff? And what I try to do is what I view as a two-prong approach. One, I try to be strong and direct on the things that you just have to be accurate about. So the prime example of that is the old, the safe withdrawal rate story. When people have numbers they're going to use to plan their retirements, my view is you report the numbers accurately. End of story. I just don't even see how it could be discussed. I don't even understand the controversy. You report the numbers accurately. The old school studies get the numbers wrong, wildly wrong. You tell people that. You say those studies are analytically invalid. They got the number wrong. They failed to consider the most important factor, which is valuations, and they got the number wrong. Here's the correct number. To me, that's simple. And just across the board, if somebody says the P10 value today is 25, I have a large stock allocation. I'm a little nervous. What should I do? I say, well, do what you think's right. It's your money, but I do feel you should know that when the P10 level is 25, the three times we've seen that in history, the average loss from that price level is 68%. So you're taking a big chance that you're going to lose two-thirds of your life savings. If that's okay with you, go for it. But I do want you to know that. I'm not gonna hide it from you. I'm gonna tell you. So on that sort of issue, I what I think can fairly be described as a firm line. I don't play games. I don't play word games. I just say flat out. And I'm famous for this. People refer to this on discussion boards. They say Rob's style. They talk about it as my style. My style is to be forthright on numerical calculations, to just tell people the facts. Because I feel we have a right to, everybody has a right to their opinion on judgment calls. But on facts, I don't feel that way. And again, this may just be my reporter background, but on facts, I feel we have an obligation to tell things as they are. And then when we get to the stage where they say, well, maybe we're in a new golden age. Maybe what happened in the past isn't going to apply. That's fair game. That I have no problem with, because that's a matter of opinion. But when you state a fact, I feel you should state it clearly. On the other hand, the other prong of my approach is to, well, part of it, I just said it. It is to be very open on the judgment calls, and in general, if anything, to try to reach out, and to be very yielding on those sorts of issues. So, I'm a big critic of passive investing. I think I'm the most severe critic of passive investing alive today. I know of no one else who criticizes passive investing as consistently and as harshly as I do. But that's the hard side. And then the soft side is, but I invite advocates of passive investing to my blog. I like to hear from them. I like to be friends with them. I like to talk things over with them. So I think that's I think that's an emotionally healthy way to discuss investing, to be straight talking on the objective facts so that people know the realities, but to understand that none of us is God, and nobody has it all right. Nobody knows it all, passive in people, the people, passive investing, I think, is a truly horrible idea. But the people who support passive investing, a lot of them are smart, good people, and we can learn from them. And so we want to encourage them to participate and to share their ideas. So that's sort of the two-prong approach. And I've done a few podcasts that I think have a lot of the, a good bit of the hard stuff in them. And so I wanted to do a podcast that had some soft stuff in them, although all of them have a mix. The hard ones have some soft stuff in it, and the soft ones have some hard stuff in it. So it's never going to be all one or the other. But I wanted to do something that was uplifting, something that was, optimistic, bright. And so this one is titled The Last Bear Market. And the point here is a lot of people are feeling down about their investments because they've lost so much money. But there's a huge silver lining in this dark cloud. And the silver lining is this could well be the last major bear market, the last secular bear market that we ever have to experience. Now, that's an incredibly bold statement. I'm known for bold statements, and that one sort of takes the cake. Am I predicting that this will be the last major bear market we will ever see in the United States, or if we take this far enough in the world, frankly? I'm not predicting that. If you ask me whether we're going to see huge bear markets in the future, I'd say probably yes. But it is absolutely possible that we could make this. It is in our power to make this the last major bear market. I'll distinguish here secular bear markets, which is what I mean by a major bear market. That's when you have a crash in stock prices, where you have massive loss of wealth that had been accumulated over many years, and a small bear market where, prices could be climbing a bit and then they drop a bit. A lot of people use the same phrase. They use bear market to refer to both, and I think that's unfortunate. It makes it much harder to understand what's going on than it would be to use more precise terms. A drop in prices within a bull market, say, when prices are going up and then there's a drop for 3 months or 6 months, people will refer to that as a bear market. That's not really a bear market. It's not a secular bear market. A secular bear market is when the distinguishing factor is secular bear markets happen when stocks are wildly overpriced. So we went to the highest valuation levels we've ever seen in history back in the late 1990s. So it was inevitable that there was going to be a secular bear market following that, that there was going to be a crash of, as I say, the average secular bear market crash is a loss of 68%. But the worst that we've seen was a loss of 89%. That was the crash of the late 1920s. And valuation levels this time were much higher than that. So it's theoretically possible the crash could be even bigger. I don't expect that to happen, and I pray that it doesn't happen. But it you can't discount the possibility. It's out there. As a again, we go here to where we have to state the objective facts objectively. We have to say that no one should be surprised if we see a price loss of more than 89% from the high. But there's certainly no need. There's certainly no economic need that we should have a price drop that big. The economic need has already been satisfied. We've had a big price drop, and we're now down to reasonable valuation levels. So there's no economic need for any further price drop. So what I think it would be a wonderful thing if the investing community could come together and declare, we want to make this the last bear market ever. What do we have to do? And there's not very much that we have to do, amazingly enough. Bear markets are highly predictable. People will talk as if they just sort of come out of the sky, like, who knew? Who knew we were gonna lose all this money? Well, anyone who talks that way doesn't understand the ABCs of stock investing. Now, I'm sorry if that offends some expert out there, but that's the way it is. Secular bear markets are as predictable as, I think you could say they're as predictable as the weather. Some would say the weather's not predictable, but the reality is, I think the weather people do a pretty good job of predicting the weather. They can't predict it far out, but if you look at today's paper and it tells you, 80% chance of rain tomorrow, it's probably going to rain tomorrow. And that's how secular bear markets are. They're not perfectly predictable, but they are highly predictable. We know when one is coming. And every now and then there'll be some fluke event, like we sort of had a fluke event this time. And in 1995, prices were so high that a secular bear market was predictable. And you would have expected that it would come within 10 years. You would have expected that by 2005, we would have had a major bear market, a major loss of middle class wealth. And it got held off. It didn't happen till 2008. Well, that's not such a bad prediction, is it? Stocks have been doing poorly since January 2000. So if you predict it bad times ahead in 95, it was within 10 years, you were certainly right that stocks began performing poorly within 5 years. And then we had the actual crash, you know, 13 years down the road. So they're not perfectly predictable, but they're predictable enough. We all know that if we're going to have a major stock market crash, we need to lower our stock allocations. And the people who understand valuations and who put forward, you know, responsible predictions of where stock prices are going told us in advance this was coming. It was no secret to anyone who wanted to know. Many middle-class investors don't know about it because they don't spend all their time studying this stuff. But certainly the experts who follow the literature either knew this was coming or should have known. It certainly was no secret. Now, so bear markets are predictable. And if they're predictable, the logical next question is, well, what causes them? You know, if the weather is not something we can change, so that's not a good example. I'd like to think of an example of something where you can avoid the thing happening, and I can't think of that right offhand. But if bear markets are predictable, we obviously can find out what are the factors that cause them, what are the things we look for, and when that happens, we know a bear market is coming, and that will tell us what we need to do to avoid any future bear markets. And the answer is simple. The answer is, massive bear markets are caused by massive bull markets. Nothing could be more clear. If you look at the historical stock return data, you will see this. It'll jump out at you if you just spend a few moments looking at the data. 10 minutes should do it. There are lots of little ups and downs. You know, small bull markets, small bear markets, I don't know that they are predictable at all. Some people say they are. I personally don't believe it. I don't see it. When I look at the data, I don't see any predictable pattern in the small bull bear markets. So I maintain that short-term timing of the market is impossible. That's my personal belief. I'm not dogmatic about it, but that's what I believe. But the big ones are as predictable as could be. I don't know what more you could ask for. Every time we go up to absurd valuation levels, 20, a PE10 level of 20 is the danger zone. If we go up to 25, you just know that a major stock crash is coming. It's there's never an exception, not a single exception in the record. And then, of course, if we go down low enough, if we go down to, say, 7 or 8, which is way below fair market value, we're now at about 16, 17. If we were to go down to 7 or 8, which would be another 50% drop from here, you can then predict a major bull market, because it's not. And again, it's what I'm telling you is what the data says. But it's not very hard to understand why the data says that, is it? If prices go that low, where the stock market is valued at only half of its true value, well, then it's like having a giant magnet just pulling stock prices up. They're going to shoot up. And once they have that momentum, they usually continue going up. And of course, the opposite is true the other way. When we were in the high 20s not that long ago, it was like a giant magnet pulling prices down. And you knew we were going to have a price crash. And now that we've come down, there's no economic need to go lower, but there's an emotional issue where so many investors now are so shocked because they didn't see it coming that there's a good chance we will go lower still. So how do we avoid that? That's what I think we should be talking about. I've said before, I'd like to see a national debate on investing, a national debate on the flaws of the passive investing model and the need to replace that with a new model, a model that I propose we call rational investing, but I'm totally open to other names for it. I have no, you know, there's no need that it be called that. It's the best name I've been able to come up with. But we should certainly be having a national debate about the flaws of the passive investing, which I think can fairly be described as a complete and utter disaster at this point, and the need for a model that describes reality, a model that works. We're all invested in the market, right? Not everyone, but most middle-class people have at least a 401k plan if they want to fund their retirement. So we all should care about this. We all should want accurate information. And we can't get accurate information as long as the passive investing model remains dominant. It's impossible. We've demonstrated that beyond any reasonable doubt whatsoever in the great safe withdrawal rate debate. So we should all be working together to have a national debate on changing what's wrong with stock investing today. And the question we should be asking, I think, among many others, is how do we prevent bear markets? And the answer is we prevent bear markets by preventing bull markets. If you don't have the cause of bear markets, you're not going to have a bear market. So do away with bull markets, and we've done away with bear markets. And it's not that hard. You know, people are going to respond to that, and they're going to say, what? But it would be a wonderful thing to do, and it's not at all a hard thing to do. Okay, why is it wonderful? Now, I think people have a sort of a bias in favor of bull markets. People think bull markets are good. It's undeniable. You can go back and look at the newspapers from the 1990s, and you'll read these headlines, and they just describe it. You know, we were destroying our prospects for earning good returns in the future. And they were, you know, they're putting exclamation points like it's a good thing. They're jumping up and down. They're having parties. And that, I find that offensive. I find it offensive. We shouldn't be throwing parties over things like that. What is a bull market? A bull market is, in order to understand how stock investing works, the most basic thing you need to understand is that the difference between an economic return and a cotton candy phony bull market return. An economic return is when you share in the profits of the underlying businesses that you're invested in. And in the U.S., for a long, long time, U.S. productivity has been sufficient to support an annualized real return for stock investors of roughly 6.5% real. That goes back a long, long ways. So when I say do away with bull markets, I'm not saying do away with good returns on stocks. 6.5% real is a fantastic return. In a year in which we had 3% inflation, that would be a return of 9.5%. 9.5% without any bull market. Without any bull market whatsoever. That would be if we started, let's say we started this at a P10 level of 14. We get to a P level of 14 and we have a national debate and we say, okay, starting today, we're all going to work together to have no more bull markets, no more bear markets. That would mean every year from that point forward, if we all work together, if we all cooperated, we all did our part, we would all stock investors would enjoy from every year from that point forward a return of 6.5% real. And if you throw in 3% inflation, a return of 9.5%. So stock prices would continue going up. The price would be going up by about 10% per year, but not more than that. It's when you go up by more than that that you have what's called a bull market. It's when you have irrational price increases that they refer to it as a bull market. And that's where the danger comes in. That's when all the trouble starts. So I'm certainly not saying let's do anything to hurt the stock market. Quite the opposite. I'm saying let's lock in an annual return of 6.5% real with inflation, might be 9.5%. Very, very healthy, very, very attractive long-term return. As opposed to what we did in the 90s when we let prices get so high that in January of 2000, do you know what the expected 10-year return was based on how stocks have always performed in the past? It was a negative number. A negative number. When you bought stocks, if you were putting money into your 401k and you purchased stocks in January of 2000, you were purchasing an asset that was likely going to give you a negative return for 10 years. Whereas if you put the money in a money market account, you would have gotten a positive return. If you put the money in TIPS, Treasury Inflation Protected Securities, you would have gotten a return of 4% real. Positive 4% real, not a negative number like with stocks. I don't get it why people who are quote-unquote pro-stock think that that's good. It's good when stocks provide a negative return. And then they call me a bear. I am called a bear frequently. I deny it. I don't think the term fits. I think I'm more pro-stock than the people who call themselves pro-stock, but they call me a bear, and yet I'm the one saying stocks should be providing 6.5% real every year, and they're the ones saying, you know, clapping their hands and applauding when stocks provide a negative annual return. This makes no sense to me. I don't get it. I do not get it. So now it's not realistic to think, you know, I'm giving the ideal. When I say we could stay at a PE10 level of 14 forever and earn 6.5% real every year, obviously that's never going to happen. There's you know, in order for that to happen, we would have to convert every single investor to the rational investing model, and that's not going to happen. So I know we're never going to stay at 14. But it does seem possible to me that we could limit the extent of the irrationality. We could limit the extent of the emotionalism so that when we go from 14 to 15, it's not a big deal. When we go from 14 to 16, it's not a big deal. When we go from 14 to 17, it's not a big deal. 17 is a perfectly fine PE10 level. When we go from 14 to 19, I start to get a little nervous. When we go from 14 to 20, we're in the red alert danger zone. That's when we should be all investing experts should be telling people, wait a minute, now stocks are dangerous. The world has changed. An investment class that at fair price is a great long-term buy, it's not such a great long-term buy anymore. It's in dangerous territory. Now, if we had a coordinated effort to educate all investors that that's so, I believe we could persuade many investors to lower their stock allocations when we went above 20, to sell stocks, to buy other asset classes offering better long-term value propositions. And that's how the magic is done. If people sell stocks, that brings that PE10 level down. So if we all worked it hard enough, we could get the PE10 level down to 19, to 18, to 17. And there you are. You're right back at reasonable stock valuations. No, you have no bull market. No, I mean, you had a little bit of a bull market, but no major out-of-control bull market. No bear market. Drop from 20 to 17 isn't going to cause any panic. It's just, you know, everybody can sort of take that in stride. No major bull market. No major bear market. Just wonderful returns every year. 6.5% real every year. A little more than that when we were going from 14 up to 20, and a little less when we were going from 20 to, you know, back down to 17 or however low we go. But it would average out. You'd still be getting your 6.5% real return. I see that as the future of investing. And it's, people are going to say it's an impossible dream. People are going to say that's never going to happen. But my answer is why? Why can't it happen? If we educate people, the key is education. It's in people's best interest. It's in everyone's best interest that we invest rationally. And that's rational investing. That's really all rational investing is. Rational investing is just an investing approach. It's the opposite of passive investing. Passive investing says, ignore prices. When the market gets emotional, you get emotional with it. If the market goes totally bonkers crazy, you go totally bonkers crazy. Don't just do what the market does. Just, you know. And I say no, because what you're doing then is you're saying, you're hurting two things. You're hurting yourself because you're setting yourself up for huge financial losses that'll crush you, and you're hurting all your fellow investors because you're allowing the market to run out of control. If you respond rationally to price increases, you help yourself because you keep your risk level constant, which is what you should be trying to do if you're trying to provide for your financial future, and you're helping your fellow investors. You're doing a community-oriented act. You're bringing the market price down to rational levels for everybody else, not just for yourself, for everyone. I see that as a win-win-win. I've never been able to see any downside, and I've asked in many different environments, you know, can somebody tell me a downside? And no one has ever come up with anything. It's a win-win-win. It's there aren't many things like that in life. But this is one case where everybody wins. If we all develop the courage and the knowledge and the heart, you know, part of this is caring about other people as well as ourselves and our families, to speak out against passive investing and to speak out in favor of rational investing. It's always been a war between the two. There are long periods of time where there's sort of a tug of war where the market's half rational and half passive, and then there are times when you know, passive just dominates, just tears everything to shreds, like we've seen in recent years. And then there are times when the market is rational for long periods of time. But I want to see it rational, you know, as long as can be. I mean, I'd like to see it permanently. And I feel that the key is education. You can't wait. This is the one thing I believe strongly. You can't wait until prices are out of control. You can't wait until we're at a P10 level of 44 and then come out with your announcement, oh, I noticed today stocks are dangerous. If you do that, people have their pride wrapped up in it. You know, they've made lots of money and they want to think that they're geniuses, and it wasn't just that they happened to be born at a time when prices went to absurd levels, and they don't want to admit they were wrong. They've given advice to people that's bad advice. They don't want to admit they're wrong about that. You get all these ego issues. So what I think is the time to do this is when prices are at reasonable levels, as they are today. It's been very hard to talk about this. We started talking about this in the discussion board communities back in May of 2002, and it's been difficult. We've had lots of positive response, lots of people interested in learning, but lots of people extremely hostile to the idea of rational investing. But if we talk about it today, and I don't mean just today, but say, you know, for however long we're going to be remaining at reasonable price levels, it seems to me that's where the opportunity is. People might be more open to hearing it today. And then once we do the educational effort, you know, we provide people with calculators so that they can invest rationally. We provide them with literature. We set up websites that allow honest posting. I mean, that What could be a more modest proposal than a discussion board community, say, that allows honest posting on how investing works in the real world? That, you know, that's a radical notion today. I don't know of any community that allows that, any major community. I'm sure there are some out there that I don't know about, but I've posted in numerous communities that allowed honest posting for a limited time, and then ultimately the passive investing dogmatist just became so upset with that it was banned. Well, what if we set up rules that honest posting would be permitted, regardless of how upset the passive investing dogmatists become? People would have a way to learn. People would have a way to learn. And many people have demonstrated a desire to learn. So let's say that 10% of the population today understands the fundamentals of how stock investing works. Open up these boards to honest posting, and that percentage is going to go up. Say it goes up to 30%. There's a big difference between having 10% no and having 30% no. It then gets very hard to silence people who will report what the historical data says, people who will talk about investing in common sense ways. It becomes very, very, very difficult. There's a big difference. You can silence 10%. We've seen it. But silencing 30%, that's a lot harder. I want to run through some ways in which middle-class investors would benefit if we were to eliminate bull markets and thereby eliminate bear markets, wild out of control bull markets and wild out of control bear markets. There are huge advantages to the middle class investor. The very first thing is, I think it would change a big problem we have. More and more I see the saving, at my website I have saving articles and I have investing articles, and it's most people think of it as a bright line distinction. There's the saving topics and there are investing topics, but more and more I see these topics as being connected. And I think one of our problems with investing is that we are such poor savers. I say this largely because my personal experience, there was once upon a time I had no interest in saving. It was a joke that I would ever write a book on saving. And what happened is I don't want to go through it, but I lost a job. I didn't like the feeling of financial vulnerability, and I went out and studied effective saving as a way to respond to that. And then my saving, improved so dramatically that I was just amazed at the change in my life. And that led me to say, I want to learn all I can about this and tell other people about it. Okay. But it was amazing to me that I ended up learning so much about saving that I could write a book about it. Well, it amazed me a second time to learn so much about investing that I could write about it. I had even less interest in investing than I did in saving. But I really fell into it because of what I learned about saving. It's like a natural growth process. When you learn how to save effectively, what you're really learning is to care about your money. And if you care about your money, you're going to want to invest effectively. And this has always just drives me crazy. When I'm in a community of people that are effective savers, some of the discussion board communities I participated at have a large percentage of effective savers. But, what I think happens sometimes is people think they're effective savers, and maybe they're really not. Some of them are people that had big incomes. This is something I think I've come to realize over time. And they call themselves, some people have big incomes and they save nothing anyway. So you do have to give these people credit. If they have big incomes and they save, they're doing something that a lot of people don't. But if they have big incomes, it may be that that's the primary, they're not really great savers. Maybe they're just moderately good savers. They've never really thought about what it takes to save. They've done it to some extent, but not intensely so. And those are the people that I think can be taken in by passive investing. They think of themselves as knowing more about personal finance than they really do. But the really effective savers, I think, understand how money how taking care of your money can change your life. And those sorts of people, I don't think are going to be taken in by passive investing as a rule. They're going to see the holes in it. They're going to want to invest rationally. And, you know, the simple, I try to simplify things to the extent I can without, you know, I believe in making things simple as they can be, but no more simple than that. When simplification leads to misleading, I steer away from it. But all else equal, I'd like things to be simple. The simple way to think about a bull market is it's borrowing money, borrowing stock returns from the future. That's what we do. If you stay at the same valuation level and you earn 6.5% real, you're sharing in the productivity of the U.S. economy. That's all to the good. No downside to it. If you have a massive bull market where the prices are not going up 6.5% a year, they're going up 20% or 30% like they did in the 90s, all you're doing is, it's not that the economy has become three times as productive as it's ever been. It's that you're borrowing returns from the future. That's all. And of course, when the future comes, it doesn't seem like such a great idea, because then you've got 10 years when stocks, you know, underperform super safe asset classes. So we need to get that message out to people. We need to explain to people, do you really want to live on credit card debt, which is what you're doing when you participate in a bull market? You know, we certainly have experts come out and tell people not to borrow on credit cards, and they still do it, of course. And people are still going to engage in passive investing, as I say. That's human nature. But it certainly would help when people have a debate going on in their mind, should I do the right thing, should I do the wrong thing, to have the investors, the experts, encourage them to do the right thing would help. Right now, most of the experts are encouraging us to do the wrong thing. They're encouraging us to stay at the same stock allocation when prices get out of hand. This is what's so maddening about the current state of play. It's not even that the experts are neutral. 80% of them advocate passive investing. A large percentage. You see this everywhere. So, one, I just think it would help us all to become better informed about money in all sorts of ways for the experts to talk straight on investing. So that's a big benefit to middle-class investors. A huge benefit is that bull markets make planning impossible. I've mentioned this before, but when I study early retirees and I try to study them and say, how is it that these people were able to retire, you know, at age 40 or 45 or 50 when others have a hard time retiring at 65? And the single biggest factor in my assessment is people who successfully retire early are planners. That's the key. There's all kinds of other things that go into it, but if you're a good planner, you will be successful financially. And if you are a poor planner, you won't. And it doesn't matter what income is not nearly the biggest factor. That's what most people would guess. If you said, who can retire early? They'd say somebody that makes a lot of money. It's not so. There are people that make $100,000 a year. They're poor planners and they save little. There are people that make $40,000 a year who are effective savers and who are able to retire early. It's amazing, but it's true. Check out the post archives of the Retire Early boards and you'll see. Obviously, earning an income, a bigger income, is a plus. But it's not the primary factor. The most important factor is planning. Well, what do bull markets do? They make planning impossible. At the top of the bull market, stocks were valued at three times fair value. So if you had $100,000 in your portfolio, it had a real worth of only $35,000. So what happens when you decide to go out and buy a car and you're trying to say, should I buy a $20,000 car or $30,000? Does it not influence you that you believe you have $100,000 in your portfolio and not really $35,000? Of course it does. That's a key consideration you should be taking into account in all your spending decisions. But you can't do it because nobody's telling you the truth about how much you actually possess. I think a big thing that would help us eliminate bear markets and eliminate bull markets is is for the newspapers. When they report what the Dow is or what the S&P is, they should have a second line. It should say fair value price. In other words, they could say Dow price today, 12,000. And then next to it, they could say fair value Dow price, 4,000. And then people would know. They'd say, oh, I see, you know, for today, the price is three times fair value, but I don't really, I shouldn't be pretending that I really have that much. It's going to fall by 65% within the next few years. So I need to be planning based on that lower number. That would change the history of investing right there. One thing, just get the newspapers to report the fair value number and get the portfolio statement. Same thing when you get your portfolio statement. It should have at the bottom line, it should say, you know, nominal value is X, and then next to it, fair value price, you know, reduced for overvaluation. And it should tell you. And then you could plan realistically. And then you wouldn't be surprised by a bear market, would you? You would know it was coming. And you would know to lower your stock allocation. You would know to protect your assets. That one change would eliminate massive bear markets, I believe. So that would be a big deal. Bear markets hurt middle class investors by making, and bull markets hurt middle class investors by making planning impossible. They hurt the economy. Do you see that? I have a guy. There's a guy, Drip Guy. I posted a board. It's the Goon Central board, and I'm the only poster. It's only goon posters that are allowed there. It's crazy. The whole thing is crazy, of course. But they only allow goon posters there. If you post in a civil way, you're banned. It's like the opposite. It's like Opposite World. Remember Superman's Opposite World? But they allow me, and you know, their theory is we can attract these goon posters that will, you know, ridicule Rob, because Rob favors rational investing and the goon posters favor passive investing. And there's a guy there, Drip Guy. That's his screen name. And, you know, he was saying today, oh, Rob, you know, you think this bear market was caused by overvaluation in stocks. Here's a media account. It says it was caused by the bank bailout, you know, the bank crisis, whatever you want to call it. Well, of course, I understand that the immediate cause of this bear market is the problem we're having in the banking, you know, area. But that's the immediate cause. The underlying cause, the real driver here, is the overvaluation in stocks. There's never been a time when we got to the price levels we've been at for the past 10 years where we did not have a massive price crash. And common sense tells you that if you valued stocks three times their fair value, at some point, reality is going to intrude and stock prices are going to come down hard. We didn't know it was going to be caused by a banking crisis. That was unknown. It could have been caused by, you know, we could have had a terrorist attack and that would have caused a huge price drop. Or we could have had a gas shortage and that would have caused a huge price drop. You never know what the precise cause is going to be. But you know the price crash is coming. And that's the point. So, but when it comes, it's not just that overvaluation leads to a price crash. The price crash then has an effect on the economy because you've sucked all this wealth out of the economy. Middle-class investors today, they're scared to spend money for good reason. They've lost so much. You know, say you're going year by year and you're saving $5,000, $10,000 a year, and now all of a sudden you've lost $50,000. Well, it's like losing 10 years of savings. Naturally, they cut back on buying cars and on vacations and buying houses and all this sort of thing. Well, you do away with bear markets, which can easily be done by doing away with bull markets, and you don't have that pressure point on the economy. You take it away. The economy becomes more stable. And this is something on which I disagree a little bit with Robert Shiller, not entirely so, but a little bit. Shiller writes in his book that He makes a point, which is true. He says these things we're talking about with valuations, it's a zero-sum game. To the extent that people listened to Shiller and lowered their stock allocations, they benefited personally. But others were hurt, because if you sold stocks when prices were in la-la land, somebody else had to buy them. And so that person was hurt as much as you were helped. And that's, of course, true. There's a sense in which this is a zero-sum game. But it's not a zero-sum game in the final analysis, because bull/bear markets cause major economic dislocations. You do away with bull markets and bear markets, and the economy is going to be much more stable going forward. And economic stability is not a good economic instability is not a good thing for anyone. You know, it means people lose their jobs, it means businesses fail. It's bad in every possible way. Do away with bull markets, do away with bear markets, and we'd have a more stable economic climate. Doing away with bull/bear markets means stocks are much less risky. Everybody talks about how risky stocks are, and what they mean is the prices are volatile. Well, I'm saying let's keep prices within a sort of limited range. Maybe the lowest we would see on the downside would be a PE10 level of 10. And the highest we would see on the upside would be 18. Stocks would still be somewhat volatile. Stocks would not be, you know, as predictable as, say, tips or CDs or whatever. But you would, you know, if the highest PE10 level is 18, that's a big difference from having the highest PE10 level be 44, isn't it? Stocks don't need to be as risky as they are today. We have the power to change that. It's an impact. I am talking about personal empowerment. This is a big theme at my website. We cannot affect, you know, a lot of things that go on in the economy. It's bigger than us. But we can affect middle-class investors working together. We can affect whether there are bull markets or bear markets in the future. All we need to do is to make efforts to educate each other. And bull markets and bear markets are a thing of the past. And we have the technology today to do it. That's the thing. On the internet, you know, a lot of professional financial planners are very reluctant to tell us the realities of stock investing because they would go out of business. You know, if they told people back in the 1990s, we have a massive price crash coming, and the guy down the street is telling them, you know, la-la land stuff, they're not going to have any business. They're going to be, you know, they're going to lose their jobs. But on the internet, we've had hundreds of people talk straight about stock investing. You know, all of the things at my website are the product of community efforts. The stock return predictor I developed as the result, you know, I did part of it, but I had help from hundreds of people who were posting in a constructive way, sharing what they had learned about stock investing with me. Same thing with the retirement risk evaluator, same thing with valuation informed indexing, same thing with the scenario surfer, same thing with rational investing. All the articles, all the podcast. This is the power of people, you know? Let's make it. I don't have any problem with the power, you know, the power of people when it's put to a good purpose. In other words, we don't have to rely on the stock selling industry to learn how to invest. We don't. We can inform each other. We can read books, and we can study the historical data, and we can reason things out together, and we can report our results. We, of course, we need to have some discussion boards where, you know, the site administrators will stick up for us, where they will protect us from abusive posters, to be sure. You know, we without that, we can't do it. But I've always believed if we had a solid group of people working together, insisting, not asking, insisting that the site administrators do their jobs, that they honor their promises, I think we could get that. And that changes the history of investing. I'm going to do a separate podcast on that, on the internet aspect of this. Eliminating bull markets and bear markets eliminates a lot of the emotional turbulence. We don't pay a price. Just when you lose money, you're losing something real. That's important. But how about all the stress and anxiety you're going through today because your 401k number is so much lower than it used to be? Isn't that also a cost of this crazy approach to stock investing followed today, this passive investing model? Passive investing makes us sick. You know, why don't we just say it? It makes us sick with worry. We don't know what's coming down the road because of this idiotic model that's been discredited in the academic literature for 20 years. Why don't we get about the business of removing that model? You know, getting the word out to people, at least, that the model doesn't work, that there are better models available to us. Let's get about the business of building better models. I think even the experts would be willing to talk straight on investing if they knew that there was a core group of people out there who understood the ABCs. My strong impression is that many of the experts don't really like it, that they feel that their hands are tied. I'm not so sure their hands are tied, but they feel that way. I think a lot of them would like to give much better investing advice than they do. And again, it's all community. We help the experts, and then the experts help us. It's all community. You give and you take. That's the way it works. We've got to have a little idealism to make this happen. It's not going to, there's not some Martian that's going to come down from the heavens and is going to, issue an edict. And rational investing is going to prevail. It doesn't work that way. We need to be willing to stick our noses out a little bit. Take some chances, for good cause. We need to stick up for our friends, when we see them under attack, that sort of thing. And then it snowballs. People see that. You do that for somebody, and they see it, and then they do it for somebody else, and it multiplies. Just as the ugly stuff multiplies, When you see abusive posters entering a community, they do something and they don't think they're going to get away with it. And then the site administrator does nothing. And then they're emboldened the next time to do something worse. And it goes downhill. Well, the ball can go uphill the same way it goes downhill. So, cynicism is the enemy. I sometimes say passive investing is the enemy. Cynicism is the enemy too. A little idealism goes a long way in trying to accomplish something like this. The bull bear market cycle makes stocks harder to understand. A big, big problem is just that there are millions of middle-class investors that just don't understand stocks. This is why people defer to experts, quote-unquote experts. They say, I don't understand it, Well, if stocks didn't change, if they were less volatile, which is what I'm urging, I think people could understand stocks better. It's a big problem when they see, I tell people valuations affect long-term returns, but people look at how stocks did from, say, 95 to 2000, and they say, stock valuations affect long-term returns? Really, Rob? Are you sure? Doesn't look like it to me. Valuations were crazy in 95, and stocks went up more in 96, and they went up more in 97, and they went up more in 98. We lose our ability to tap into our common sense when we get into crazy bull markets and then the crazy bear markets that inevitably follow. Stocks would be easier to understand for everybody involved, including the experts, to be sure, if price volatility were reduced, which means eliminating bull markets and eliminating bear markets. Massive bull markets, massive bear markets. Bear markets cause a transfer of wealth from the middle class to the wealthy. Rothschild had a quote where he said, bear markets are God's way of returning stocks to their rightful owners. The middle class can't hold stocks when they're wiped out financially. The middle class has a long history of buying stocks at the highest prices imaginable and selling at the lowest prices imaginable. And all this passive investing junk you hear for the past 20, 30 years, that encourages that. Our common sense told us we should lower our stock allocations when prices got out of hand. But a lot of experts told us, no, 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 hold. Prices are high. Hold, hold, hold. And a lot of us did that. Now we're facing ruin. And we're under pressure. And we still may see another 50% price drop. So a lot of us are going to end up selling when prices are low. We listened to the experts. We bought stocks when they were sky high. And we'll end up selling when they're dirt cheap, because that's the inevitable emotional counter to buying high is selling low. The two things go together, you know, like love and marriage. If you're going to buy into the passive investing model and believe that there's some sort of pixie dust, that this is going to be the first time in history that we're not going to have a price crash when prices get out of control on the high side, you're probably going to end up swearing off stocks when that price crash comes, because emotionally you're unprepared for it. We eliminate bull markets, we eliminate bear markets, we eliminate that problem. We eliminate that huge transfer of wealth from the middle class to the wealthy. So it's it's an equality. It's an equality issue. It is. I like looking at things that way. I like looking at things in terms of the people that it affects. Passive investing hurts human beings and other living things. Passive investing hurts middle class investors and their families and their friends and their coworkers and their neighbors. Passive investing hurts you, and passive investing hurts all the people you care about, all the people you love. It hurts all the projects that you could be devoting yourself to if you hadn't suffered these financial losses. It's a real thing. It's a real problem. It's not some artificial, theoretical, abstract thing that people talk about in classrooms. You know, that the efficient market theory is this theoretical classroom thing. But you take it out to the real world, and it does real, real, real serious harm to real people. It's not a joke. It's real. Let me think. I'm just looking here through a list to see if I've covered the major points. We can do this. We can do it. I believe something we have to think about in the future is how to market this. One of the big problems that we've had trying to fight passive investing is that passive investing has been marketed so effectively, and I'm going to try to do a separate podcast on that as well, the marketing of passive investing. And they've come up with these slogans that enslave us to bad ideas. You know, timing doesn't work. The reality, of course, is that short-term timing doesn't work. Long-term timing does work and is mandatory for anyone who wants to invest effectively for the long run. So the timing doesn't work slogan enslaves us in ignorance. Many, many millions of people today reject rational investing solely because they don't think it's possible to time the market. And if you ask them why they believe that, they have no answer. They have no idea, except they've heard the marketing slogan, timing doesn't work, 100,000 times. And that's not too much of an exaggeration. So we need to have our own marketing slogans. People who advocate a rational approach to investing. You know, short-term timing, never. Long-term timing, always. Things of that nature. So that people will hear the message. It's not enough to do a podcast where you explain the realities. That's not enough. It goes in one ear and it goes out the other. People need to live this on a day-to-day basis. As I say, we need discussion boards where we can talk about it. We need marketing slogans to counter the marketing slogans of the people who are trying to sell us stocks. You know, we need consumer advocates on television. We have consumer advocates to protect us from used car salesmen, right? Should we not have consumer advocates to protect us from people who advocate passive investing? $8 trillion of losses in the past 12 months? Does that call for a little consumer advocacy? I say yes. And we need to speak out. We need to learn how to speak out strongly against the ideas that hurt us. This is what you see me do. I try to live, you know, I try to be an example to others. I started, you know, back in May 2002 talking about safe withdrawal rates, and I was a little mouse. There's a guy, PD person. He was a friend of mine. And he once had a post. It was funny. He said, Rob used to be this puppy dog of a poster. And it was true. You know, I'm by nature, I'm just a gentle, you know, sort of non-assertive person. I am a non-assertive person in many, many ways. But I care about people. And when you're on a discussion board, you make friends with people. That's the nature of the medium. They become your friends. You share stories with them, and you know, you get to know them, and you care about them. And I saw these people buying into these old school safe withdrawal rate studies, and of course I know that they're wrong. I've looked at the data. I know these people are likely going to suffer busted retirements years later, and it's one of the worst life setbacks imaginable. So I it was hard to work up the courage to say anything because I was scared of what the goons would do to me. But I had no choice. I really had no choice. And after that happened to me, I more and more I came to believe it's cowardly not to say the objective realities, not to tell people. As I say, on the issue of judgment calls, that's let a thousand flowers bloom. You know, I don't think it's my place to tell people what to do with their money. I don't think it's my place to say our stock's going to go up in the next year or down. I have no idea. But when it comes to, you know, what does the historical data say about the safe withdrawal rate? How much can you plan to take out of your retirement plan and have a realistic chance of it surviving? On that issue, I take a firm line. And on the whole passive investing question, I take a firm line because I see how much it's hurt my friends. And we need more people doing that. A big problem is that there's lots of good information out there. There's lots of junk, but there's lots of good information too if you search for it. But when you run into people who give good information, they tend to be very timid and tentative about it. And that's true even the best among them. Robert Shiller's the best out there, but he's too timid in my estimation. I think I'd like him to be stronger. I'd like all of them to be stronger. All of them. And I make an effort. I make an effort to be as strong as I dare to be while still being accurate, obviously, you know, and still being fair. You want to be fair and balanced. You don't want to go over that line and you don't want to become cynical, and you don't want to be unfair. Then you're becoming a goon yourself. You see, that's the worst thing you can do. But, you know, if you're talking about did passive investing hurt us when it caused an $8 trillion loss? Yes. Yes. And that needs to be said. And the only way we're going to get the big name saying it, which is what we need, Rob Bennett saying it doesn't do much. We need John Bogle saying it. We need John Bogle saying this was a mistake. Starting today, we change. We fix. He's not going to say it unless people bring it to his attention that it needs to be said. And, you know, we all have a part to play in that. We all have a part to play in that. And you know, I do. I hope I've done what I can to show the way, to show the way. But bottom line on all this, let's, you know, as we continue to discuss the fallout of the passive investing stock crash of 2008, let's start to talk not about sad stuff, not looking backwards. Oh, I lost my money. You know, you have to do that to some extent. It's perfectly natural. Get it out of your system. But at some point, we have to acknowledge the past is past. The money is gone. It never existed in the first place. It was a fiction. And we need to look forward and say, is there something good we can do with this? And the good we can do is we can make this the last bear market ever. So let's do it. Good luck with your investing strategies.